Faith is what's for? All right. I'm Mark Thomas. I'm on the NCBA staff. Welcome to the second session of Natural Organic. The purpose of these sessions are really threefold: education, information, and most importantly, dialogue between you, the audience, producers, and our expert panel. A couple of notes. There are very bright yellow evaluation sheets on the table. We would ask you to complete those, and my staff associates will pick them up during the session, so you just have to leave them on the table. There are some cards that, if you prefer not to stand and ask the question verbally, you can write your question card, and staff will pick them up, and we'll ask the panel from the floor. We have mics for those that want to talk to the panel or ask the panel. I would ask Jack that if you have questions, you keep them to the point and succinct, and not get in the mode of making statements or points of view, asking questions. Our moderator today is Jack Allen, Professor Emeritus, Marketing from Michigan State University. Many of you in the room have known Jack for a very, very long time. I've had the unique experience of knowing and working with Jack Allen for about 30 years. He has a passion for the beef industry. He has a passion and understands meat retailing, and really there's not a better individual to moderate this panel than Jack Allen. Please welcome Jack Allen to the podium.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. It's been a pleasure over the years working with you. My first job out of college was with the American Meat Institute as Director of Retailer Relations in Chicago, so Mark and I go way back. And it was fascinating to see this industry. The theme of your convention is let's get her done. You've been doing that for remarkably effective ways for the last several decades. I watched your industry go from swinging carcasses into subprimals, boxed beef on a pallet unitized ship. More recently, we're seeing central process of meat cuts. We're seeing more brands. We're seeing more marketing. And yesterday, It seemed to me that the opening session, which was the best session I've ever been to, that was a tremendous talks by everybody. We went out of there really inspired, and it made me think of the theme, let's get her done. What does that actually mean? And I think the answers were given yesterday, and it means really, in a broad sense, in a marketing sense, let's build this business 10% by the year 2010. Now, that's an industry term, and it's the industry aggregate result. But how does that get done? Kevin, in his speech, Kevin Freeberg, said, okay, it's by individuals each looking at their business and figuring out, is there a way to add value to this commodity beef, a value that some group of consumers or customers will pay a premium and a greater reward and therefore take more control of your business? And then the question for this panel then is, natural and organic going to be, for you, one of those options of adding value to this commodity? Kevin said, let's decommoditize the beef industry. Well, I don't like that term. I don't know what that means. But in this program here, are you going to look at this as an opportunity or a challenge to respond to a group of consumers and customers that are increasingly demanding organic and natural beef? Okay, admittedly, it's small, it's under 2%, but as you look across the landscape of where we shop in our food stores, even Walmart has a huge program in organic produce. Is meat to follow? You see the growth of Whole Foods and Wild Oats growing at 20% a year, where the retail industry is growing 2%, 3%, or 4%. So there's a lot going on here, and the question is, what would be the implications for beef? We've asked, as our guests, four speakers who have some experience in this, very different experiences, and they are willing to share their ideas with you. Kevin said one other thing that, as a teacher, resonated with me. He said, you know, there are some learned and there are some learners. And he said, if we're going to take action, bold action, that we have to put ourselves into a learning process. And I've often considered myself, somebody said, Mark might say, Jack, he's an expert. No, I'm a constant student of this magnificent industry. And so we're all here to learn and share ideas. And so now I'm going to be quiet so we can get on with this thing. We asked Scott Eilert if he would be the leadoff speaker here. He represents one of the biggest food companies in the world, operates in over 60 countries in virtually every aspect of food and food management. And they have a multiplicity of brands and products and positions with all species of animals, and including natural and organic. So we thought we would lead off with Scott to give a little broader perspective of where we stand here. Let's welcome Scott to the program.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here. It's an exciting topic. It's a topic that is ripe for change. It's topics that's deserving of change, and it fits very closely with the mission of NCBA over the next several years. I really want to focus my time somewhat on consumer expectations in this product area, but then really focus the time on the need for regulatory change in this area. As Jack pointed out, this is such an important market segment, and doing it right and doing it well is so critical. And a concern that we have and that others in the industry share is that we're not set up as well as we need to be from a regulatory environment to meet the needs of the consumers, to deliver on the promise. So that's going to be the primary focus of my comments today. As Jack indicated, we come at this from multiple species. We come at this from multiple perspectives. We have almost every gamut of natural and or antibiotic removed and hormone removed products across all of our proteins in our business. And so as we try to put together, and we've spent a lot of time recently putting together what we think the market should be, what should it be, not what it is, but what should it be, it's going to require significant change on the part of Cargill. It's going to require significant change on the part of some of our competitors as well as our suppliers. But we think that that change is going to be critical as we try to grow margins for this industry, as well as prevent the erosion of margins that currently exist within the current natural and naturally raised programs today. This slide is a slide that represents the top three reasons why consumers buy beef, why they purchase beef. Now, as you see, out there on the far right is the question of it's all natural and it's all organic. Now, the point I want to make is not that those things aren't important. It's just they are top of mind to a smaller group of people. The majority of people still consider the top of mind response, why they purchase beef, around safety, around taste, around freshness. Key thing to keep in mind as this topic evolves. If the topic moves from being one of offering choice to consumers to a debate of good beef versus bad beef, safe beef versus unsafe beef, then we all lose. Safety and quality and palatability are the non-negotiables, regardless of the choice that is being delivered to the consumer. As you think about now, as you drill down into that segment of people for which this is very important, those that regularly purchase natural and organic beef, you look at their top reasons. Taste is one of the primary reasons, but some of the other things are really emotional type things. These are better for my family. This is something that's healthier for me. And so in the case of an emotional argument, it's critical that we maintain the credibility of the industry. That credibility, quite frankly, has been called into question in these topics or in these products. Because natural doesn't necessarily, there are varying definitions of natural. There are varying definitions of the removal of hormones and antibiotics from a supply chain. So that's why we think it's so critical that going forward, we address the policy such that we minimize some of those confusions, we level playing fields, and we raise the bar. Right now, from a policymaking standpoint, USDA has a comment period on what is natural. The Agricultural Marketing Service is conducting listening sessions to pull together comments on what should be naturally raised. The debate is real today. The need for change is critical. So as you have opinions, you have voices, please don't be afraid to reflect those to USDA and to AMS. Critical to Cargill, as we looked at how we put together and we managed all of our varying perspectives on this, the four key tenets that a small group of us got together on that we were going to hold ourselves accountable to were, one, raising the bar in this area. We think there's an opportunity to raise the bar in all these product categories. Make these product categories mean something. Level the playing field through standard definitions and standard operating procedures for each of these categories. Minimize the confusion that's taking place in the customer. Do what's right for the consumer. And lastly, or maybe as a key tenet, be pragmatic. If we're going to deliver on a promise, let's make sure that the supply chain can deliver on a promise and that we don't set bars so high that we have a great product that we cannot effectively deliver. So with that, we looked at the varying definitions of natural and organic and naturally raised, and to us, as our vision of this is that it falls into three buckets, that these products fall into three categories. One is an organic bucket that we're not going to spend a lot of time talking. It's very well defined, and there's standards put forth against that. One focuses on hormones and antibiotics. Call it a naturally raised tier, but what we've talked about doing within our shop is just calling it what it is. No hormones, no antibiotics. Never, ever. In the production of those animals. And when we say hormones, we're talking about growth promotants in general, not just those hormone-derived. And then lastly, having a category that defines natural, raising the bar on that category beyond where it is today, making sure that when something says natural, that it prescribes to the tenets of minimally processing for the category of products that it's in. Just because I can use injection and smoking and things like that to make a natural bacon doesn't mean I can use some of those same processes to make a natural steak. Just because I can tumble and inject marinade into a pre-cooked roast beef because that's how pre-cooked roast beef is made doesn't mean that those same processes would be considered natural for a fresh steak or a fresh roast. As it pertains to the removal of hormones and antibiotics, we propose prescribing to a no, no, never, never. We don't believe that there's a way to be half committed to this. If a consumer doesn't want the use of a growth promotant or an antibiotic, it should be throughout the life cycle of that animal. Additionally, that process should be third-party verified to make sure that the credibility is maintained for that product category. There'll be plenty of time for questions, but I appreciate the time you've given me for the opening comments.
Excellent, Scott. Thank you so much. Okay, now Mel Coleman, Jr., Coleman Natural Meat. He's been in this business for a long, long time with a ranching family, and is going to give us the perspective of his experience. Thanks.
Thank you, Jack. It's a pleasure to be here today. And, you know, after the first session, one of the things that we found out is then everybody were kind of all talking about this natural thing. But please understand that we all love the beef industry. That's where we are. It's all about choice and alternatives. So please listen to our comments kind of through those eyes. My name is Mel Coleman, Jr. I'm a fifth-generation cattle rancher from Colorado. I'm currently chairman of Coleman Natural Foods, a leading processor and producer of natural and organic beef, pork, chicken, and other prepared food items for today's consumer. In the 70s, high interest rates and the value of livestock at commodity market prices was not conducive to covering our production costs on the ranch, and we were facing financial disaster. But one night at the dinner table, my sister-in-law, Nancy, mentioned that a small group of her friends at the University of Colorado were concerned about the increased use of chemicals in food production. And what they were looking for beef that came from livestock that was raised without the use of antibiotics or growth hormones. And these consumers wanted an alternative, but most importantly, they were willing to pay the price for the value that was added. So Dad said that a chill ran up his spine, and as a result of that conversation, an industry idea was conceived. And after an arduous 2 years of working with the USDA to get a definition for natural as it pertained to a raising process, finally, the USDA came up with a definition, and the first definition of natural in 1981 was how livestock was raised. Then later, under Memorandum 55, 1 year later, natural also pertained to minimally processed, no artificial ingredients, which had to do with a meat product. Natural in the beginning meant on how livestock was raised. And so there's the confusion that Scott was talking about. At any rate, soon after we got started, what happened is that we were shipping one or two boxes of beef to several small natural food stores all across the country. Interestingly, 24% of the people that shop in those stores are vegetarians. And I'm glad to say that I probably converted more vegetarians back to eating beef because of the way that it was produced, what they were looking for, than maybe anybody in this room. Today's natural and organic consumer, they range from 24 to 44 years of age, children, highly educated, and with a household income of $100,000. In some of the research that our company did, we found out in 2005 that 32% of consumers tried natural or organic meat products in a 12-month period of time. Data Monitor recently did a study, and it said that between 2004 and 2009, that the natural and the organic segment was going to grow 134%. To meet this demand, what we've done is that we've expanded our certified rancher program over 17 to 20 states, and it now involves over 800 different farmers, ranchers, and feeders that are in our program. We still engage and listen to consumers, and several years ago, consumers told us that what they wanted to do is that they wanted to go into one location in the store, primarily because of all the confusion that's involved in the labeling, and they wanted to find under the same protocols natural beef, pork, poultry, and prepared food items. And today we're trying to deliver that expectation. But where do we go in the future? Recently, Secretary of Agriculture Mike Johanns, in an address regarding the 2007 Farm Bill, he stated, it must be tailored to provide strong support that is relevant to current trends and forward thinking for future growth. The USDA must recognize that naturally raised is a term that reflects how livestock are raised, without the use of antibiotics, growth hormones, growth modulators, and without animal byproducts in the feeds. And this definition has to be in place, we believe, that if producers are to meet both consumer expectations, but also to have the ability to capture new market opportunities. With the advent of renewable energy introducing new markets for key crops, pressure is being put on the livestock industry that can be offset by giving livestock producers alternative marketing opportunities through a naturally raised label. Animal welfare, I believe it should be part. We need strong standards. Look at this picture. In my mind, it's deplorable. But it's what pictures like this and situations like this do is cast dispersion on our entire industry. In the international markets, had natural always referred to how livestock were raised, like in the original definition in 1981, I believe that the loss of business in many international markets may have been minimized, if not eliminated. Consumers' demand for naturally raised programs and products present a value proposition to producers and can eliminate or minimize the boom-bust fluctuation of the commodity markets. In conclusion, strong natural and organic definitions are both relevant to current trends and forward-looking for future growth. And they'll do four things. One, give producers a level playing field by allowing them to earn the true value for the livestock and the way that they produce them. Two, bring clarity in labeling to consumers. Three, eliminate the temptation for unscrupulous smoke and mirror marketing programs that misuse the term natural on fresh meat products, and 4, bring a degree of leadership and the respect that's due back to our industry in the international markets. Thank you.
Thank you, Mel. Great. Coleman is basically in the supermarkets, and I heard yesterday that beef sales and food service are almost at a par. So food service is very, very important to us. With that in mind, we've asked Chris Arnold, who is representing Chipotle, if he would give his experience with respect to natural meats in his restaurant operation. Chris, thanks.
Thanks, Jack. And Mel is perhaps mostly in supermarkets, but also in Chipotle restaurants. We get some of our naturally raised beef from Coleman. How many folks here have been to a Chipotle? Okay. Well, maybe a few more than in the last session. Chipotle is the self-proclaimed gourmet restaurant where you eat with your hands. We opened the first one of our restaurants about 14 years ago with this very simple idea to show that food that was served fast didn't have to be a typical fast food experience. And the way we did that was by buying only fresh ingredients, nothing frozen, nothing processed, by cooking them in the restaurants. Our restaurant kitchens better resemble those of fine dining restaurants than fast food shops, where there's lots of machines for reheating things and whatnot. As we've grown, our vision has evolved a little from simply wanting to show that fast didn't have to be a traditional or a typical fast food experience, to one of now wanting to change the way Americans think about and eat fast food and even food in general. And the way we're going about this is through an ideal that we call food with integrity, that has us looking back along the food chain to learn as much as we can about how animals are raised and vegetables are grown so we can get the best ingredients that we can. I wish I could say that that move was the product of some great epiphany or foresight on our part that natural and organic foods would be increasingly in demand in this country, but they weren't. It was instead the product of a menu item that wasn't selling very well. Our carnitas, which are made from pork, were not selling very well, and they weren't because they weren't very good. And so we set about making the carnitas recipe better, thinking, you know, if the stuff was better, maybe people would buy it. And in doing that, we were looking at the recipe, the cooking methods, and of course, the pork that we were using. And at that time, we happened across an article in Ed Baer's newsletter, The Art of Eating, about the farms of Nyman Ranch, which were raising hogs in sort of an old-fashioned way, on open pastures or deeply bedded barns, pure vegetarian diet, never given hormones or antibiotics, and we liked that story. And we ordered pork from Nyman, and we cooked with it, and we liked that pork. As part of the exploration, we looked more at what the alternatives were and how the pork was raised or the pigs were raised that were providing our pork previously, and we didn't like much of what we learned. And so we made the decision to switch to using all naturally raised pork from Nyman Ranch, which carried with it a significant price premium. At the time we made the move to Nyman Ranch pork in our restaurants, we had to increase the price of a carnitas burrito or order of tacos by $1, which at our price point is pretty sizable. It went from being about $4.50 to $5.50, from the cheapest thing on the menu to the most expensive thing on the menu, a move that was unprecedented at the time and that really flew in the face of conventional fast food wisdom, where the model had become dumbing down the quality of ingredients so you could sell food cheaper. We were ratcheting up the quality of the ingredients and selling it for a higher price. So what happened? We started selling more than twice as many carnitas, burritos, and tacos as we were before. Funny thing happens when you improve the quality of what you're doing and when you tell people that you're doing it, we found people gravitating to the carnitas because of the story, because of the better animal husbandry, and they kept coming to it because it was just better. That launched this idea that we called Food with Integrity, and now it runs across everything that, or many of the things that we use in our restaurants. It went from naturally raised pork to chicken, and from chicken to naturally raised beef. Today, all of the pork that we use in all 540 some of our restaurants is naturally raised. More than half of the chicken we're buying is naturally raised, and about 40% of the beef, with a goal of having all naturally raised meats in all of our restaurants within the next 2 years. It's gone beyond the meat we use. We're sourcing an increasing percentage of organically grown beans every year. This year that'll be about 25%, up from 20% last year, with a plan of increasing that as the supply comes available until we're using all organically grown beans. And most recently, it had the synthetic hormone RBG8 removed from our sour cream, with a goal of having RBGH-free cheese in all of our restaurants by the end of this year. All of those changes, we think, put us at the forefront of this sort of new agrarian idea in this country that you see evidence of in many, many places and in many, many ways. Now, four of the five largest non-fast food takeout food providers have a strong emphasis on natural and organic foods. That would be Whole Foods, Chipotle, Panera Bread, and one other that I'm not remembering at the moment. You see a rapid proliferation in the number of farmers markets and in community agriculture programs around the country, where people are demonstrating a willingness to pay more money for artisanal food products or things that are raised or grown in a way that they believe to be better. And we've been living that firsthand for about 6 years now. Thanks.
Thank you, Chris. Excellent. Our anchor man here is John Steika of Certified Angus Beef, and comes with the experience of building perhaps the strongest brand in your industry. And so your perspective, John, is going to be very interesting. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Jack. I'll try to be brief in our comments, but go ahead and frame for you why a brand that's been around since 1978 and is heavily rooted in the conventional beef industry makes a decision to get involved in the natural segment. Again, we are not on a mission to become a natural brand, but are on a mission to bring a desirable dining experience to a category that increasingly becomes more interested in quality and dining satisfaction and so forth, using production claims that are currently identified as natural. You know, why did we get involved? We've been around since 1978, but have been involved in the natural system since only April of 2004. And the reality is the reason we've done so is because of pull-through demand. We don't do anything unless there's demand for it. As an industry, we can force-feed products to the industry and fail, or we can provide the consumer with what they're asking for and be successful. And what we have found is there is a growing segment of the industry that is putting value on the natural production claims that we've established and others have established within natural products. We operate a bit different than most other natural programs. One, because we're 99.5% rooted in the conventional industry. But two, because we don't own a facility that packs and processes cattle. We don't own supply. We don't own cattle. We don't own product. We own the brand, and we orchestrate and navigate the marketing and positioning of that product in the marketplace. Currently, we have two processors that do us an outstanding job of processing the Certified Angus Beef Natural line, and that'd be Tyson Fresh Meats and Nyman Ranch, that again coordinate the production system and the marketing of the production of the product under the natural claims that have been established. You know, I think it's interesting, as we think about natural, we think about retail, we think about Whole Foods, we think about Wild Oats, we think about Chipotle, we think about other segments that have long been identified as niche players even within that retail or food service segment. What we found interesting with respect to our experience, even as short as it has been, is that it is not necessarily a niche retail market. We have three major retailers that are mainstream retailers that carry both Certified Angus Beef under conventional systems as well as Certified Angus Beef Natural, in many cases side by side. Those retailers are, like I said, mainstream and large in number, and they're located in different areas of the country. Obviously, one's located in the Pacific Northwest. Probably not a surprise that that's a demand area for natural beef. The other one's located in the High Plains. The third one's located on the East Coast. And so driving home the point that it's not just a niche retail market, but it is a growing mainstream market, and at the same time, it's from coast to coast in terms of the opportunity that this growing segment might provide to each of us as programs and producers in the beef industry. With respect to our claims, and Scott did an outstanding job of outlining the issues with labeling and what is natural. To natural, we've defined it as what the consumer has told us natural is. And I'd focus most importantly on the first point there, and that's no hormones, no antibiotics ever. That includes ionophores in many in our instance as well. And that's what the consumer has told us. How do we position this product? We don't position it as better. It's the same as conventionally produced product from a palatability standpoint, from a safety standpoint, from a wholesome standpoint. But as Mel said earlier, it's positioned as a choice for those in the marketplace that make a conscious decision that they want to buy product produced under this avenue. And we have found it being successful by positioning that where we can see certified Angus beef and certified Angus beef natural positioned in the same case side by side, and both of them serve their respective demographic of the consumer walking in, and we don't see a decrease in movement of one at the expense of the other. Again, we offer the same carcass specifications that we have for our conventional product, and that makes us somewhat unique in the natural arena. But again, just who is our customer? We're 86% retail business. And the reason is they drive carcass utilization. Carcass utilization is what minimizes the investment or allows the industry to maximize its investment on putting in place some of the production strategies that need to be there, such as removing implants and so forth. This would vary from our conventional program, which would be about 53% retail and about 33% food service. What does it mean to us? That shows you the growth that we've seen in natural in the short time that we've been in it. We're on pace to exceed, obviously, our 2006 number by quite a bit. More importantly, as we look at it as a percent of our total business, we're a 0.5% of our total business, which is natural today. And keep in mind, we are and will continue to be rooted in the conventional beef production industry. But we're expected it to be 1.5 to 2% of our business next year. More importantly, in 5 years, it could be upwards of 10% of our total industry, of our total CAB business. What does that mean for you as producers? And you can focus on the bottom line there in terms of the number of cattle that it'll take to meet a 60 million pound demand for certified Angus beef natural. Because we don't accept every calf that is produced in a natural system because of our carcass specs, there'll be an industry there that just for our program would require 450 to 600,000 head of live cattle. Is that enough to say that it's mainstream in the entire industry? Probably not. It's a niche opportunity for perhaps many of you that can cater your production practices to this sort of production system. And again, to say, will it continue to grow? I would say so. Who would have thought that many years ago that branded beef would be more than a niche today? And so it's an opportunity to consider in an industry that continues to look for ways to drive growth in terms of demand, in terms of production efficiencies.
Thank you, John. Excellent. Okay.
I don't think we could have a better panel of laying out the topic and the issues, and now it's your turn. Comments, questions? We have mics in the audience. If we'd like your name, and then a short question if you have one. Okay, where are we? Come on, we only have a few minutes. Here we go. Thank you.
Verification and audit. I have a question about third-party verification audit. Philip Ellis from Wyoming. What can somebody kind of just generally give what the landscape is there? Is it books, records, scientific data, inspecting carcasses? What's involved in that?
Thank you, Mel.
Basically, the way that our program is set up is on an affidavit system. We send out a pre-approved supplier agreement, which has got a list of things to do, a lot of things not to do, but it's very specific on what you shouldn't do. The third-party audit, then, are random audits where we would come out and actually just monitor the way that, for example, any animal that you treat, how you mark that animal so that it doesn't come into the natural system. And it's, like I said, it's a random, and that's currently what we're doing. We just kind of monitor and go through with you what the farm plan is or the ranch plan on how you handle livestock.
Is there any other approach on the panel? Okay. Yes, please.
Bill Pampacker from Kansas. A few years ago, I was in a natural food store in Denver, and I noticed on the chicken. It said it was all natural and fed a vegetarian diet. As I recall from my days on the farm, when the chickens would run around, they were omnivores. And the same is true with swine, as I recall. How can you have a vegetarian diet being claimed as all natural when the species isn't necessarily a vegetarian species?
We have a chicken expert here.
Well, if you think I'm going to profess to that and get the arrows, I'm not going to do it. But
go ahead.
You know, that topic has come up in our shop quite a bit because as we think about beyond just beef, I mean, if you really wanted to get technical about it, if you wanted to make a claim about how the animal was fed, natural for beef would be vegan feed, but for pork and turkey it would be omnivorous diets. And so I tend to agree with your line of thinking. What we feel like in setting these standards is whether an animal is vegan fed or not vegan fed, to me, is if a system can allow for the monitoring of that, and if a brand wants to make that claim, that's fine. We're not certain that that should be a core to what is naturally raised. That's maybe an augmented or an add-on to the two base tenets of removal of hormones and removal of antibiotics.
Thank you, Scott. Please, who's next? Yes, go ahead.
We've seen some early indications that as soon as someone starts to go to the natural product as a producer, they want to differentiate from the rest of the beef supply. And it seems to be kind of a fine line before they unwittingly, in many cases, begin to disparage the regular beef supply. My question is, would it be helpful for the industry to develop some kind of nomenclature guidelines to try to have some good management practices along that before we begin shooting at each other within the industry? John, that question probably is most appropriate to you.
I would agree very, very specifically with that. You know, that is something we debated quite a bit. You know, the reason that we ventured into the natural category with our same brand name and not with another brand that would be specific only to the naturals, because to do so removes the brand power that we have in certified Angus beef that's been around. And so we debated that very issue. Does having certified Angus beef natural increase in sales at the expense of certified Angus beef? And what we have found is that the consumer that buys CAB natural is a different consumer than the one buying CAB. And so with respect to those key things such as hormones and antibiotics, which the bell has already been rung on in the consumer's mind, that is something that if they're going to look for natural, that's what they're looking for in that product. And it doesn't necessarily say anything negative about the conventional system. I think to your point is where we would have concern relative to humane handling of livestock and so forth, is that should that be part of a natural system, what does that say about an industry that's probably doing already an outstanding job in terms of how we handle and manage cattle and puts a claim on a label that in all honesty might not be significantly different, if at all better, than what we're doing as an industry. So with respect to hormones and antibiotics, we don't see the issue of disparity to the conventional product, but as we get into some of these other things where there's probably less of a difference in terms of actual difference between the conventional industry and the natural side, if you will, that's where we would pose some concerns in terms of how should those, or if they need to even be, incorporated into a natural brand name. Great point.
Jack, could I make a quick comment on that?
Okay. Go
very
ahead,
specific. In the mid-90s, what we did is that we did an advertising program in a chain of stores that carried both conventional beef and natural beef. Our whole point, ever since we've been in business, is always just to sell the attributes of what we had and not in a disparaging way or at the expense of anybody else. Through that advertising, the sales of natural beef increased 120%. Ironically, the sales of conventional beef in the same stores increased during the same period of time 20%.
Excellent. Please.
Yes. I'm John Schaefer from up in Minnesota. If you've been in the lobby here in some of the sessions, you've probably heard the price of corn has gone up and feed has become kind of a scarce commodity. We have two proven technologies in this industry, ionophores and implants, that greatly increase feed efficiency. Ionophores pose absolutely no effect on product quality or safety. implants, no effect on safety, might affect grading and some things like that a little bit. But how will this scarcity of feed affect the natural market?
The economics of this.
Okay. I'd address that question from this standpoint. To me, given the current situation with input costs as they are today, it's ever more so critical that a clear definition of what these natural products are be delineated. If it's cloudy and all of a sudden you're a conventional producer and there isn't a level playing field and there isn't clear definition of what's as natural as what's not, you're put in a competitive disadvantage at a time when you're already faced with this external force of input costs. So whether or not it impacts, I don't know that it's necessarily going to impact greatly or not greatly the overall growth for natural products. I think that in this environment, it just furthers the conviction and the idea that we need to have a clearly defined definition for what those products are and make them stand for something so that in a conventional system, we can be as competitive as possible as well.
It would increase the cost of producing a natural
product. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There was a question over here. Yes, please.
Hi, it's Michelle Gorman here from the Australian beef industry, and obviously we're watching this debate with a lot of interest. And something we're really grappling with is, are consumers of natural beef products a homogeneous group? So basically, is it better to be putting on the labels specifically what you mean, i.e. no hormones, no antibiotics? Or should we be moving to a definition where you just put naturally raised and that means a very defined raising practices were met?
I think it's a good comment. I think that if naturally raised did pertain to those things, that it would make labeling a lot simpler and we wouldn't have to get into each company or each program would not have to get into exactly what they do and make negative claims about what they do or don't do.
How much do you think you should put on the label in transparency, understanding?
Higher is better. I mean, we continue to run across situations, not just related to this argument, that where the industry suffers credibility is where there's a lack of transparency. And so I think as transparent as we can be is critical.
Yeah. Any other comment on this one?
I think one of the things that we know about the natural consumer is they're a reader. They like to read labels.
Yeah.
I mean, our natural label is about twice the size of our conventional label for the very reason that they're not as interested in seeing the product as they are seeing the data, the information, the story behind that product.
Yeah. I was in Walmart a few days ago thinking about this session, and I looked at ground beef and says, all natural ground beef. And I turned the package every which way trying to say, well, what do they mean by that?
Yeah.
And I think that speaks to that point. There's a question over this way. Kind of rushing here to make everybody heard. Please.
Yes, my question is actually pretty similar to hers, but I'm just curious. I know that the definition of natural right now is actually really cloudy, even through the USDA. There's no real specific definition, and I know that they're going to be working on that in the future. And I'm just curious as to if there is a definite natural definition within each of your companies right now, and I'm just curious as to how different they are within just your four companies themselves.
Well, it varies in our company today, and we recognize that. We reflect some of the confusion that's out there as it pertains to the use of natural on minimally processed, no artificial ingredients. We think that it's best for the industry that we all do some soul searching and say, okay, this category, if it's going to exist, the bar has to be raised, and it has to be raised with a greater level of clarity. And that's going to mean that some of the products that we make today that are labeled as natural won't be labeled as natural tomorrow, and that's okay, because that's still going to allow for the protection of the margin within that product category.
Mm-hmm. And is it fair to say that what you're talking about would establish the floor, the minimum, and then we're
Absolutely.
Going to see processors, we're going to see retailers, as they compete, adding on to these definitions. I was just in Marks & Spencer in London, and they don't call it natural or organic. They have a whole bunch of bullet points that say, here's what we're doing, here's not what we're doing, and so forth. They don't give it a term. They just communicate with their customers, here's the nature of our product.
I would say that ideally, in terms of what consumers were expecting from us, that is that any product in a store that had the natural word on it, it would have to be under the minimally processed nor artificial ingredients, but the only way that you could put the natural term on there is that if the material that that product, in other words, the meat or the poultry that that product was made from, was raised under the naturally raised standard, and that would pretty much clean it up, in my opinion.
And Scott, that's what you were presenting there. Yes, Mark, go
Jack,
ahead.
From the, for those who are asking questions with cards, here's one from the audience. The science says there is no difference between natural and conventional beef. Is there a risk to beef's reputation if the consumer finds this out? And maybe to put Scott on the barrel for that one.
You know, again, science unfortunately doesn't drive policy. And a lot of the other thing that science doesn't drive a lot of times is consumer perceptions and attitudes. As much as, I mean, I'm a scientist, at least I try to be one. And I mean, it's disappointing to me at times that consumers don't listen to science, but they don't. So this is less, to me, this is less about science, this is more about offering choice, personal choice.
If I could comment on that too, Jack, real quick, is I think as we look at someone who's not on the panel, but someone who's done a good job in that category, is Laura's Lean, with respect to there are folks that have perceptions about our industry that, again, will either convince them not to buy beef and go to another protein source, or if you offer a product that's in line with their perception or belief or choice process, they'll pull back into the beef case, and Laura's Lean to be one of those markets or one of those products that has pulled chicken consumers into the beef category. Because of perception, not necessarily because of scientific data on wholesomeness or flavor and so forth.
Please.
Robert Wells from Oklahoma. My question is more on the economics of things. You know, we've heard as recently as yesterday from some of the groups of the, in the alliances that natural is hard to get paid for on a cow-calf producer level. One of the alliances groups yesterday said that if there was an $80 premium on that carcass, that would just about wash out the efficiencies that we're losing by not being able to use Rumensin Thailand implants. The list goes on and on. When or how is there going to be a mechanism that's going to be able to draw back some more of this premium, a bigger piece of the pie to these cow-calf producers, where I can make it a benefit to recommend to my clients as cow-calf producers?
I believe that strong labeling is important, number one. The second thing is that strong brands. Because if you get a retail chain, for example, that starts buying from each one of us up here and getting us to bid on each cut so that they can buy the lowest price item, it turns it into a commodity. So labeling is number one, and strong brands, number two, will protect your margin.
It's a dilemma. I know that's not an easy answer. Yes, here, please.
Scott McGregor from Iowa. I guess getting back to maybe just the CAB part or everybody's contracting of the cattle, before you go into the program, I think Coleman probably has a program where, say, you've got 100 head of cattle and you want to enroll them into your program, and 70 of them make it through the program and get priced. Is that how that works? And then the CAB, 18% of the cattle make the CAB grade. What percent?
On the natural side, that'll be upwards of 30 to 40%.
30.
When you pull the, it's no surprise. When you pull implants, they grade a lot better.
How does that? With no implants, they grade better. Okay, that was my question.
Yeah.
How does that get back to the producer when he sells the cattle to Tyson? How does he get the premium for the? Does that get back to him?
Yeah, I don't know exactly how the structure is set up between the supply chain and the packer on that, but it makes sense with respect to the question that was posed earlier as well. If you're going to raise cattle naturally but truly produce a commodity product from a quality standpoint, you're going to lose money. And the value opportunity that we see in the industry, and again, this is still a fledgling industry when you look in terms of the scope that it is, and so again, time will flush out more opportunities for profitability as the demand and the supply begin to come more in line. But if you're going to go through the efforts of removing implants, holding back antibiotics and so forth,
then that product that you produce better be a high-quality product that has premium value to the consumer, as opposed to just a commodity product that's raised without implants and antibiotics. And so that's where we have found value. What we believe to drive value back into the pockets of producers is that we're providing a product that's produced under those production specifications, but inherently has pull-through demand from an eating satisfaction standpoint. And I think that was talked about yesterday. Daryl Tatum left some information during one of the Cattlemen's College breakouts that Whole Foods did a survey of their customers, and the number one response on what they're looking for in natural products, I think there was a 77% response rate, that they're looking for a guarantee and consistent taste. And so if we can exceed that expectation of that dining experience, that's what's going to allow us to drive more profitability back to the producers to replace some of the inefficiencies that we look at when we immediately start pulling out some of the technology that's there today. The one quick point, we would probably all be in favor of including ionophores back in the system. It's a tremendous technology. The issue is classified as an antibiotic. And the consumer's trust is very hard to gain, but it's very easy to lose.
That's right.
And so that's why they're removed.
Please go ahead. Thanks.
Lucinda Williams from Massachusetts, and I want to say, just comment on that very last point. Absolutely. I'm also, as well as a beef producer, also a dairy farmer, and we have felt that tremendously with some of our newest technologies. The question I want to ask is regarding the definition of organic. We've had several comments about that. Up on the screen, we have natural organic beef, and they're very different. You folks gave great presentations and very different definitions of what natural is. And how and when can we expect an industry-wide definition of what natural is going to be?
Scott, you've been looking at this process. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
If the process moves through the regulatory at the pace, at a realistic pace, we're probably still 2 to 3 years away.
Really?
And that's, you know, by the time it's fully implemented, it could be a 2 to 3 year process. I don't think you should be discouraged by that. I think that what you should continue to press upon your legislators is to do something. Don't let this die. Don't let the momentum created on this topic stall out because it's too difficult of a thing. There's too much controversy, so we're just going to let status quo prevail. That's the wrong thing to have happen.
Because that's where we erode our...
That's where we erode margins.